Hello, you're listening to Native Solidarity News on CKUT 90.3 FM. Today we're speaking to Arthur Manuel, a member of the Nisqually Indian Band of the Shwepam Nation, British Columbia, and he's the spokesperson for the Indigenous Network on Economies and Trade, a network of Indigenous organizations fighting for recognition of Aboriginal and treaty rights at the international level. He's also the spokesperson for the upcoming Grassroots People's Coalition meeting on November 24th and 25th in Kelowna, BC, which will parallel and oppose the Liberal government's first minister's meeting, which the mainstream media have been proclaiming as a historic meeting to close the gap on quality of life issues for First Nations people. These meetings will be the focus of today's show. Welcome, Arthur, to the program.
Thank you.
So, Arthur, I thought that we could start out, for those who don't know, maybe you could explain from the perspective of people engaged in this first minister's meeting what the goal or agenda of the meeting is.
Well, I think probably the goal is to try and reduce and eliminate the poverty of Indigenous people through a 10-year program, and Joel Fontaine and the Canadian government have identified the lack of good health programs, the housing backlog, and inadequate education, and the lack of economic capital investment in areas of economic development as the area to focus on for the next 10 years, and they're sort of trying to call on the premiers to join in this strategy. So that's what their goal is.
Okay, and so you have been involved in organizing a parallel meeting to this process, and also will be having a demonstration outside of the first minister's meeting. So I'm sure, especially following all the news reportage about the Cashechuan so-called crisis and all that kind of stuff, a lot of people out there were probably wondering or find it hard to understand why people would protest a meeting where it said that a commitment of between $4 to $5 billion over the next 10 years will be authorized basically to eradicate Indigenous poverty. So how would you explain to people the problem with the first minister's process and what your idea of a real solution would be?
Well, I think the real problem is that the Canada is trying to treat the symptoms and not the cause, because what's not going to be talked about at the first minister's conference is Aboriginal and treaty rights. And, you know, the real problem with the poverty in Indigenous peoples is that the economic system in this country is wrong, because it's based upon basically stealing or having Indigenous people subsidize the Canadian economy, because it's our land and resources that are being used to develop wealth in this country. And the thing is that the government, in the process they're presently engaged in, have sidelined the discussion of Aboriginal treaty rights. And it's the recognition of, you know, the Canadian government and the provincial governments recognized Aboriginal and treaty rights, poverty amongst Indigenous people would instantly be removed. Right now, what really needs to be fixed is the Canadian economy, but the Canadian strategy in Kelowna is to try and have Indigenous people assume the blame for our impoverishment by saying to us that they're going to give us $5 billion so we can fix ourselves, because we have a housing backlog of about 80,000 homes. That we have poor health because of the living conditions that we are forced to live in, because, you know, that whole Indian reserve system, even up in the north there, those people used to live out on the land, you know, distributed in over the territory, and that kind of problem wouldn't exist, but it's the Department of Indian Affairs Indian Reserve policy that forces us to live on these Indian reserves, you know? It's actually a genocide when they move people off of their land for the purposes of destroying their culture.
Following up on that idea of, there's a whole bunch of media backlash, I guess, regarding the so-called crisis in Keshechuan, where tons of people, especially from Canadian Taxpayers Federation and stuff like that, started writing that it's time to abolish the reserves. And several people are also calling for that to be part of the agenda of the First Minister's meeting.
I think the thing is that, the reserve system as a community base for Indian people is necessary in some parts of the country, but mm-hmm. definitely in Treaty 9, I think Ontario and the Taxpayers Federation should move totally right out of there. The people from the Anishinaabe Nation should rule that territory with exclusive jurisdiction with regard to land and regard to the sovereignty in which they have had recognized by the government through signing those treaties.
What I've read about this First Minister's Conference is that a lot of opposition is coming up around basically the federal government trying to shift its or get rid of its fiduciary responsibility to First Nations people and put it onto the provinces. And this morning I read an article, or it was a news brief, I guess, sent by Andy Scott, talking about the Mackenzie Valley pipeline. And basically, the people working on that pipeline were worried that they'd have to pay taxes to the First Nations people living in that area. But Andy Scott said, oh, don't worry about it. The Fiscal and Statistical Management Act only applies to First Nations governments who have signed a self-government agreement. So I was wondering if you could explain a bit why some First Nations are basically opposed to signing these self-governance agreements.
Well, I think one of the things is that, every time Indian people come up with a terminology like self-government or talking about, indigenous sovereignty, the government always gets their weasel worders together and they always design policies, programs, and legislation in order to try and usurp those more genuine initiatives by Indigenous people. So when we talk about self-government agreements, you need to put into context that they're really not necessarily self-government agreements. They're actually, if Canada would apply the intelligence of the Canadian people to try and figure out how to reconcile our differences instead of trying to deviate and to circumvent, to undermine and destroy and extinguish rights, we would move a lot further ahead. So the thing is that these people aren't necessarily against self-government. What they're really against is the kind of self-government that the government is trying to force down our throats, There's no question, according to Aboriginal and treaty rights in this country, that Indigenous people are entitled to tax monies that are raised as a consequence of employment and economic opportunities that are generated from their natural wealth and resources. And one thing that's very clear at the international level is that the United Nations Human Rights Committee, in relationship to the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, asked Canada what it was doing in relationship to Article 1 with respect to self-determination for Aboriginal peoples in Canada. Mm-hmm. And Canada has basically failed answering that question because they don't really do anything. But basically what the Article 1 in this covenant says that Canada agrees to and has signed on to says that all peoples, with an S, peoples, nations, are entitled to freely choose their own political system and freely dispose of their natural wealth and resources, and that governments can't intervene in that. And so that's like a fiduciary responsibility there for Canada. And in the Canadian Constitution, it's clear that under Section 35(1) that the Canadian government refers to Indigenous people or Aboriginal peoples with an S. So they recognize us as a nation, and they break the law when they don't allow us to freely choose our own political system. They fail when they don't allow us to freely dispose of our natural wealth and resources. And that all goes back to what the pipeline issue is up there, you know, and taxation rights. They basically are trying to circumvent that by getting Indian people, and they use their money, they use our poverty as a weapon against us, because they use their money to basically set the direction, the political direction for Indian organizations, and they get them to sign a lot of lousy deals, you know, like the Nishka deal is a terrible, terrible deal, you know. And the Yukon deal is a terrible deal too, you know. And they basically are trying to steamroll Indian people into signing terrible deals like that here in British Columbia. So, and we stand up against that because it's morally bankrupt what Canada's doing. There's no question about it, you know. And the Human Rights Committee in Geneva, after we made our presentation, they're saying some of the things that I'm just saying here. Actually, basically condemned Canada for its continuation of extinguishment policy, but under the basis of modified rights and non-asserted rights. The new weasel words that they use for extinguishment in this country, and you know, Canada, you know, the Canadian people have to hold their government accountable. That's what I feel.